You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Gordon Brand Jr.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as Scott Hend claims a third European Tour title following a quite literally thunderous finish to the Maybank Championship in Malaysia.
Obviously I had a bit of luck on the playoff hole to win then. You need luck to win. If you don't have any luck, you're not going to win. And I was fortunate enough, I had the luck today, and unfortunately for Nacho, he was against the luck. His time's going to come. He's a great player. He's going to win.
The Australian got the better of Nacho Elvira in a playoff as the Spaniard continues to wait for his breakthrough win.
To be honest, I think I play great all week. Solid, consistent. I'm very happy with that. I'm happy my game has finally showed up a little bit of consistency. And I try to give it all on the 18th hole. You know, I just missed my driver a little bit and gave myself a little chance to make birdie, but I mean, I'm happy overall.
We'll look back at the best of the action, plus we'll speak to the newly retired Mikko Ilonen, and we'll also look ahead to the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play and the Hero Indian Open. Very good day to one and all. I'm Dan Roebuck and I'm joined by multiple European Tour winner and former Ryder Cup player Gordon Brand Jr. Gordon, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Dan. And you?
And not too bad. How are the bats at the moment? You're refurbing your house. You're waiting to get in to decorate certain aspects of your new wing, but you've got bat issues. Tell
new
us all about
wing.
It.
Oh, you're going to throw any more puns in there. Yeah, very, very frustrating. I've got an old property and we want to do some work on it, but until we get a bat report, we can't put the planning permission in. So work we hope was going to start in July.
How does the bat report work? Has a special person got to come?
Literally a batman has to come in and sit in the garden, view the bats going out of the house and going in, does that four times, charges me $2,000, which is nice for sitting in my garden, isn't it? It's open
How
garden.
Do you get in touch with Batman? Is it like a signal in the skies?
No, just Gotham City 01247 and then you're through. Anyway, so until you've got this bat report...
So you've got a hold on the property. It's just...
I've just got...
Works as...
If you would listen, I've got to get a bat report and then I can put that in with my planning permission and then hopefully then we go through...
You're not listed
buildings and all this. So anyway, we were hoping was going to start in July, is more like September, which we didn't want to do because it's the winter
so
time.
You are quite literally, and I've said that twice in the podcast and I can't quite believe I've said it twice, you are Commissioner Gordon.
Yes, that's right.
Excellent. Yeah. We've got another gentleman who's got a very old property, Matt Cooper, with us as well. Matt, a golf journalist and regular on the Race to Dubai show. Matt, how are you? Your property dates back to 1433, or we don't know.
We don't know how far it dates back, but we do know that Henry Tudor stayed next door. Charles Darwin stayed at the hotel next door to that. Wilfred Owens lived on the street. Charles Dickens has read there.
And your claim to fame is?
That there's going to be a blue plaque in 200 years to say that I once tipped Kurt Kitayama.
There you go. That'll do. We need tips this week, of course, for two events. We'll be looking forward to the Indian Open and the WGC match play. Not yet, Gordon. Don't worry. Don't have to...
Good,
don't look for your tips.
I've lost
yet.
My notes.
We've got to talk about the Malaysian Maybank Championship. Scott Hend making it a hat-trick of European Tour wins. A playoff success over Nacho Elvira. Nacho, of course, was second in Qatar, Matt. Scott Hend has suffered in playoffs previously. Always seems to play well in Asia. He was an Asian Tour regular, wasn't he, for a number of years. It was a good performance from him over the course of the 4 days.
Yeah, well, his two wins on the European Tour are co-sanctioned events. He won Hong Kong and in Thailand. And in actual fact, his two playoff defeats were both at Kran, which is also a co-sanctioned Asian Tour event. So there's something about the Asian Tour emblem being at an event that brings him to the boil. He was pretty hurt by the second of those playoff losses. I've heard that that really hurt him pretty bad. So I think there's an element of karma when he got over the line this time.
Any of your wins by way of a playoff, Gordon?
One. You've touched on a very horrible subject here.
Oh, really?
Four playoffs,
one
victory.
Win.
Yes.
What was it about playoffs that you... Was it just nerves?
Too many shots. It was simple as that. I took too many shots. I lost to Langer. I lost to the other Gordon Brand. I lost to Carl
Mason.
The
Gordon Brand derby.
The Gordon Brand derby. And then it was really funny standing on the tee because we had to toss a coin.
Yeah.
And so he said, right, we toss the coin. Who goes first? Yeah. So he tossed
heads
the corner.
Heads Gordon Brand, tails Gordon Brand.
And it goes heads. And he goes, it's Gordon. So there's two Gordons on the tee. So I lost to the Gordon Brand, and then the only victory I had was in the Scandinavian Open. I beat Magnus Persons.
So just the one playoff win. The playoff win here...
One out of three.
For Scott Hend over Nacho Elvira. drama ahead of the playoff because we had an hour and a half delay as both Nacho and Scott Hend were playing the last, and a thunderclap in the middle of Nacho's backswing and his approach to the 18th.
Yeah, Nacho just had a little pitch into the green, just as he's about to hit the ball, thunder strikes. Well, not didn't strike him, thank God. That would have been even worse. It would take more than 90 minutes to get over that and then come back and face his birdie putt, which he did. And in any hold, fantastic style. Really dramatic stuff. But, not quite enough in the playoff from him.
Still trying to work out if you can actually get struck by thunder, but we'll work that one out.
Oh, yes. Nicely spotted.
We'll work that one out. How difficult is it, this an hour and a half delay or whatever, you come back and you've got to strike a 30-foot putt? What's, you know, how difficult is it?
Well, I wouldn't know, because I've never happened to me.
I would have thought it would be very difficult
in the aspect of you're sitting in the clubhouse and you have got a putt, you know, potentially, and what you know is your last putt of the day to actually try and win the tournament, to get in the playoff. And he stood up and he's bolted it in the hole. I mean, what do you do for an hour and a half? I mean, there's all the psychologists in the world who tell you go and play a game or go and take your mind off it. But, you know, he's got seconds once he's got up on the green to hit the putt.
So when you're discussing that, you were saying earlier about your playoffs and the difficulty you had with them, did you have to wait a long time when you had those playoffs?
No, it was generally as, you know, I mean, maybe last group in, or, you know, wait for a group to come in or, and to see if they could match our score. But it was not. It was straight out there again. You didn't have your sort of half-hour warm-up. It was, right, we're going on the tee, off we go. So I didn't have that sort of wait around to try and fail.
Hend and Elvira went to play the 18th again, and Scott was a little lucky, not once, but twice.
Yeah, tight driving hole. He's taken the driver off the tee and knocked it right, hit the base of the tree, come back into play, and then he's hit a tree. It was a very, very tight last hole, hit the tree again, but fortunate for him, he was good enough to get up and down from the bunker to win the playoff. But third round was also quite an interesting scenario, wasn't there?
Yeah, so he actually did find the trees in the third round with his second shot on 18, and then he couldn't hold the green with his approach shot out of the rough, having to hit the ball underneath the branches. So he opted to do something that caused a little bit of controversy, and he nailed it against the backboard, the advertising boardings underneath the grandstand, came back into the middle of the green. Half the world thinks superb creativity, doing what he had to. And then a few people on Twitter decided that they thought it was, well, some people even compared it to cheating, which seems quite foolish.
Have you seen that before? I know that we've seen, you know, longer approaches sort of know that they can get a drop by going into grandstands and they're not going to go in trouble, but this was a more calculated shot, wasn't it?
Much, much more calculated. Yeah, he purposefully took a six iron because he fancied banging it back off. Yeah, he wasn't going for the... He wasn't going to try and avoid any problem. It was reminiscent of a bigger version of... Miguel Angel Jimenez did something like that against the wall on the road hole at 17 at St Andrews. It was like a sort of 140-yard version of that.
Sever used to do things like that all the time, didn't he, Gordon? Improvise?
Yeah, I think it was improvisation. I don't think you can call it cheating. I mean, how did he know the backboard wasn't going to... It wasn't going to just implode and stick into the backboard at the bottom of the stand? It was his only option. He's played the shot, and I think creativity, very well done.
Well, we can hear from the triumphant Australian next.
I felt like I played fantastic on the back nine. Nearly holed a lot of putts, and I was just missing. So I just had to keep my head on and be patient and just stay in there, because in the worst-case scenario, you get into a playoff. If I hole some putts, I win. I had to get off to a fast start against him because I'm three shots behind. That's all it was to it. And I was fortunate enough to turn in five under, and then the back nine I shot even par. You know, I can't ask for much more on myself on a Sunday where the golf course is playing quite tricky.
Well, we think where you were this time last year, you had an injury. I don't think you could pick up a club for over a month. Are you surprised to be coming back this time next year with another victory since Thailand?
Not really, because I'm a grinder and I'm a fighter. And same as my caddy, Tony Carroll, we're both the same mental attitude. It doesn't matter how old we are. Whatever we do, we work hard at what we do, and it just takes a bit of luck to win. Obviously, I had a bit of luck on the playoff hole to win then. You need luck to win. If you don't have any luck, you're not going to win. And I was fortunate enough, I had the luck today. And unfortunately for Nacho, he was against the luck. His time's going to come. He's a great player. He's going
to
win.
Bottle of red to celebrate tonight.
A few bottles of Chablis Grand Cru will be taken.
He's old school, isn't he, when it comes to celebratory drinks, Gordon?
Is there any other way?
Well, I would have thought some of the modern golfers might not have a couple of bottles.
I think when you win, I mean, you've worked so hard for it, you've got to pat yourself on the back. So if you've got, if you're going to participate in some falling down water, why not?
Have you seen the trophy, incidentally, that you win for the Maybank Championship? And Scott Hend tweeted a picture and he says, I'm taking this on my carry-on luggage. And it's a huge sort of silver tiger with, I don't want to say it's a tiger's toe, I don't know what it is. It's like a silver spike that comes out of it. How on earth? And people just go to Twitter to look at this and Scott Hend's Twitter feed. How'd you get that on a plane?
It's
just
hand
describe
luggage,
it to us, Gordy.
It does look like
it's
a tiger.
It's an offensive weapon.
With a chin, almost like a knife. And that must be to stick in the ground, I imagine, or to stick in the top of the trophy anyway. Yeah, you've got to watch out when you're taking that through customs, because I've been caught a few times, and you're meant to declare that sort of stuff.
Well, what have you been caught trying to take
through
customs?
Well, I wasn't caught, but...
you weren't caught?
I wasn't caught.
Hang on.
Well, I won German Seniors Open, and I got an old piece of wood from the surrounding area. And luckily, I gave it to my friend to take it back in the van. But Philip Pricey, who had won it the year previous to me, went back to Australia. And because it was a piece of wood, it had bugs in it, and he had to give it to them. They had to defume it, you know, get rid of all the bugs. So you've got to watch out when you're taking stuff. A, you've got to declare it, whether it is actually worth valuable money. And B, if it's a piece of wood or a nut, or, you know, I remember Roger Chapman won the Seychelles, and he got a great big nut. Was it a nut? You're laughing.
I was there. It was a nut, but it didn't look like a nut. Unbelievably, I have experience of taking trophies on long-haul flights, because I was the 2009 Kazakhstan Open Pro-Am champion.
What did you win?
I won an enormous trophy with a huge sort of glass golf ball, and then it was a sort of tree underneath it with a huge marble thing at the bottom. And they insisted that I took it home with me, but it actually would have taken my luggage allowance way over. So I had to carry the whole thing looking like a bit of a prat on the plane, full of professional golfers who all looked at me like going, who's that idiot with the trophy?
Yeah, but you had the trophy. They didn't. Just speaking of pro-ams, I don't know if you saw the tweet that Scott Hend put out there on social media. This was the head ahead of the tournament in Malaysia. During the pro-am, he said two birds crapped on him, and he got stung by a wasp, and he also lost six balls. So when we're looking for players and tips for tournaments, that's what you should be looking for. Bird droppings, lost balls. Any pro-am stories you can share with us, Gordon?
Yeah, I remember I played a pro-am in Greece with McFadden and Keith Duffy and Tom Evans. It was quite interesting.
Just explain who those people are.
God knows who they are.
They are Westlife,
Boyzone,
and a Keith Scottish Duffy. A Scottish winger.
Yeah, Keith Duffy was
which one's which?
Westlife, and then
Brian McFadden's Westlife.
Yeah, Keith Duffy,
Boyzone,
correct.
And then Tom Evans, a great Scottish rugby player, unfortunately broke his back, I think, and ended his career. So. Talking about music and a little bit of partaking of the drink on the way round was an understatement. So me going there for a little bit of preparation for the season, I realised that once the songs were going on the buggy on the first hole, the preparation was gone. So we had a very interesting week. And to listen to some of the stories the boys have were wonderful.
Well, Scott Hend certainly enjoyed a little bit of luck after the pro-am and, of course, in the events itself. Do we think he can win in Europe? Is it just an anomaly that he hasn't won in mainland Europe, do you think?
I think it's an anomaly. I can't even say that, but it was bucking the trend. The fact that he's missed out on two playoffs in Europe is pretty much proof of that.
So Scott Hend managed to claim success. It was a bittersweet day for Spain's Nacho Elvira.
Yeah, I mean, it's always the best luck. I mean, I think the European Tour wanted to finish quick. I'm glad I make it last a little longer, but you know, I mean, sometimes it goes one way, sometimes it goes the other.
It sent tingles down a lot of people. I think they saw Alex Noren from that putt he made on 18 with your impulse of celebration punch in your chest. I mean, you were probably cursing the gods when the heavens opened, but it did give you a blessing in that playoff.
Yeah, I guess it was not only the gods, in my opinion, but it's okay. You know, I mean, it was a thunder in the bad moment, to be honest. But, you know, the gods, like you say, gave me one back.
Did you take any experience from 2016 in your first playoff on the European Tour to try and learn from that experience to how you were going to approach it with Scott?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think I played great all week, solid, consistent. I'm very happy with that. I'm happy my game has finally showed up a little bit of consistency. And I try to give it all on the 18th hole. You know, I just missed my driver a little bit and gave myself a little chance to make birdie. But, I mean, I'm happy overall.
Another incredible result here coming on from Kenya. I mean, it can't be too far down the line until we see you hosting one of these trophies.
Oh, that's a point, no? That's what we work for. That's what we try to do every week. But hopefully it works out soon.
A couple of back-to-back second places for Nacho. Matt, is he a winner waiting to happen?
He might well be. And I don't know if you remember, but he also lost a playoff to Junkun Wang at the Trophy Hassan a couple of years ago. And in that playoff, Wang holed putts from all over the shop. So Elvira is probably feeling a little bit hard done by at the moment.
Now, Ernie Els was seventh, and he became the first player to record 300 career top 10 finishes since world rankings began in 1986. It's an incredible stat, isn't it? You would have thought Tiger Woods would have got 300. 300 top 10s, Gordy.
Yeah, that is an extraordinary stat. We don't really know how many tournaments he's played in to achieve that, but brilliant, isn't it? I mean, he's been on the bubble for that for the last 8 months, trying to get this
last one. Did you play
with Ernie? I've played with Ernie quite a few times.
Any good?
He was all right. He was okay. Yeah, no, he was wonderful, wasn't he? He's always been wonderful. He's always had the same reaction to his golf. I mean, even when he, I don't know, four or five putts he had at the Masters there, I know it broke his heart, but he was just Ernie, just wandered away, the big easy, and I know inside he was burning up, but he's had a wonderful career, and that's a great stat to have.
Do you sometimes think, Gordon, somebody like Ernie Els, I always get the impression he's slightly irked by this big easy notion, that people look at him and think he's got the swing was so natural and so perfect. Guys like that still have to put the hard work in, don't they?
Yeah, I think the persona that Ernie has is maybe a little bit different to other people that are punching their chest and seem to be more highly driven. You know, I know that he is highly driven, is very critical of himself as well, and so that's what drives him on. He's now, what, 48 or something, driving forward. Has a bit of an issue on the putting green with his putter. But, you know, I think what you see outwardly and what you is in Ernie is a great drive to perform.
300 top 10s. How many top 10s for yourself, Gordon?
I had 100 in 500 starts on the European
Hang
Tour.
On, but you, and the next but you question, played 597 on
yeah,
tour.
Well, I'm saying that was it was just a pivotal point, because when you reach 500 on the European Tour, they give you a gift, you know, to celebrate that 500. So it was quite a good point that it was. I had 100 top 10s, but I did end up playing 597 or 96. And funny enough, there were no other top 10s in that 97. So a bit like the guy who's just retired, there became a time you realised your game wasn't there.
So you didn't hang around for 600?
No, Matt, well, why didn't you hang around 600? Well, I finished it at the Paris National, funny enough. That was in July, and I was exempt for the rest of the year, because I could have probably got up to 610 or something, but I realised my time was done and there was no point just for a stats situation to go, I'll get to 600.
What were you honoured with for your 500th tour start?
A champagne bowl that, you know, you put the icing, put the champagne with European Tour on it, Gordon Brown Junior Achievement.
You still got it?
I've still got it, yeah.
Use it regularly?
I'm just waiting for that champagne that you promised me to go in it, Matt, and then we'll be off.
If I was called Matt, I would certainly give you that champagne, well, but as I'm not, I won't do. That's Ernie Els. I'll tell you what, just yes. Pause for a second. 100 top 10s is very, very good, isn't it?
That's very impressive. That might almost have been what the champagne bucket was for.
It's a 1 in 5 when you think about it.
Very, very
it?
Good. Very not good. Quite sure you can actually give yourself a round of applause, but yeah. I think it is some achievement.
Not.
I know, but I was just flagging up because I think it's astonishing.
I know.
We forget sometimes how good a player you were, Gordy. Thomas Peters is a good player, but he hasn't got a sponsor for his bag. He was advertising his bag for sponsorship, wasn't he? Are we taking this seriously? Surely he's got enough sponsors, hasn't he? He advertised it in 3 different languages, Gordon. Do you know the languages that he advertised it in?
No.
English?
Japanese and French.
French?
Flemish, was it?
Was it Flemish? It might have been Flemish.
I
think it could have been Flemish.
And then which was the third?
I'd have to have a look at the picture again. The third was Malay, I think. Of those 3 languages, can you speak any of those, Gordon?
I can speak English.
Can you?
Top 10 from Malaysia. There were 6 players tied for 7th. They were Fabrizio Zanotti, Andy Sullivan, Jordan Smith, Benjamin Hibbert, Darren Fickart and Ernie Els, as we mentioned, with that 300th top 10. 2 players tied for 5th, Maximilian Kiefer and Oliver Fischer. In fourth place was Johan Vermeulen. In third was Jas Janawatanonand. In second, Nacho Alvira. And, of course, our winner was Scott Hend. So those were the top 10 from the Maybach Championship. Let's remind you of the predictions from last week. I was in the seat with Richard Boxall, and Ben Coley was our golf journalist. Just a reminder that the format, two picks, one has to be outside of the top 50 in the final 2018 Race 2 Dubai standings. 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a miscut. I went for Mike Lorenzo Vera and Gaganjit Bular, and they both managed to make the cut. However, they were both tied for 48th. Richard Boxall's selections, Jorge Campillo, who was tied 20th, 5 points, and Chris Paisley, who did make the cut, he was tied 57th. So Boxy gets 5 points. And Ben Coley went for Ryan Fox, who was tied 36, and Aaron Rye, who missed the cut, minus 5. The golf journalist slot, Matt, is not doing particularly well at the moment, and Ben was adamant he was going to improve it, but he's not.
No, and I'm going to stick my head up and say I've done quite well. My two outsiders have both made the top 20. However, my two favourites both missed the cut, so I'm level pegging at the moment.
Presenters are on 105, co-presenters up to 40, guests are down to 10. That's the news when it comes to the predictions. Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game. In the Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game, Stephen Swan is still top of the overall leaderboard, while Louise Horn scored the most points from matters in Malaysia. If you want to get involved, you can do by heading to europeantour.com and registering your team. It is never too late, Gordon. I know you haven't got a team in at the moment, but you can do. So take a little bit of time out this week. It's a good week to do it. We've got the WGC.
Right.
Start to formulate your team. Matt, how's your doing?
Great advice. I shall look into that.
I'm around 2000.
Okay. You need to pick it up, Gordon, when
Thank
it comes
you.
To the Race
I'll,
to Dubai.
I'll be there.
We need the top 10 in the Race to Dubai rankings. Matt has got the details for us.
Number 10, Joost Luiten. Number 9, David Lipsky. Louis Oosthuizen at 8. America's Bryson DeChambeau at 7. Scott Hend, last week's winner, is at 6. South Africa's Richard Sterney at 5. Another American winner this year, Kurt Kitayama at 4. Ian Poulter's up there at 3. The informed Justin Harding at number 2, and still at the top, the Abu Dhabi Championship winner, Shane Lowry.
Two other news now, and the 5-time European Tour winner Mikko Ilonen has announced his retirement after 18 years as a professional. The 39-year-old, who is Finland's most successful golfer of all time, has made the decision to pack away his clubs in order to spend more time with his family after 398 starts on the European Tour. And I'm delighted to say that Mikko joins us right now. Mikko, was it a tough decision in the end?
In the end, it was easy. I took a conscious decision end of last year to step aside a little bit and think about everything, really. And I looked at it from all different angles. And the final decision came to me just pretty much 2 weeks ago. I was in Georgia at the time and playing some golf with my managers. And in the end, it was an easy decision. I was on the golf course and I felt like from now on, I'm just going to play for fun.
398 starts on tour. Didn't you want to get to 400, Mikko?
I actually thought about the 400 last year. I was maybe expecting it to get there last year, but for some reason I didn't play that many tournaments towards the end of last year, so I never got to 400. But then I didn't really think about it. But now that you say, I should probably play two more.
Mikko, the 2007 Scandinavian Masters, I read that you said that was a highlight of your career. Can you just explain a little bit about what was so special about that week?
Well, it was one of the highlights. I just highlighted that in my Instagram. I just put a couple of photos up of my decision, and it was one of those moments that I will remember. And there's a few of them, but obviously winning first time in Europe, it was my second win that year. There's lots of good memories from Sweden. That was my first win in there. And it was one of those special moments for myself.
You haven't really touched on why you're not going to play anymore. I know you spoke about the managers and you decided this was time not to play. I wanted to play for fun.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
Is it a demise of your game? Is it towards the travelling that you have to do? Why has it been knocked on the head at such an early age?
Well, I've played good part of 20 years now, professionally. I've always had this timeline in my head that I can't see myself playing well beyond 40 anyway. I was getting towards the end, and it was a little bit blurry when the actual decision is going to come and when the end is going to come. But then when I decided to think about things end of last year till now, to me, it was obvious that the right time to quit is now. I just want to explore some other things in life as well than just my own golf game. I've had plenty of time to play golf and a lot of golf tournaments, and I've experienced amazing things through it. And I think it's just time to do something else.
When you look back at your career, you mentioned the Scandinavian Masters. You got to, what was it, 37 in the world. You won the match play as well. You beat Henrik Stenson in the final. You were wire-to-wire in the Irish Open. Pick out your highlights. When did you think you were playing your best golf?
That's a tough question, really. You know, lately I've had a question that what's the most important win or most important moment of your career. I've always highlighted that it's been winning the amateur, really, because that really kick-started my pro career, and it gave me playing opportunities. It gave a little bit of name in the market, and that's been the moment that I do remember. I was playing really good golf back then as well, so maybe I was playing my best golf about that time anyway. But looking at my pro career, when my kids were babies, sort of 2012, 13, 14, and that's when I played my best golf. And that can be quite the opposite to other guys. Some people see it as a distraction, but for me, it was nice to get on the golf course. It was nice to get your own time a little bit. And some mornings, you felt like you haven't slept at all, but I just enjoyed being on the golf course for that short moment, and the result to good scores as well.
Mikko, back in 2014, I bumped into a big group of your fans at Hoylake during the Open Championship. They were like having quite a party. They were getting dressed up. You had quite a lot of support from those guys. I mean, were they a big help throughout your career?
They're friends from home. I know the group that you're talking about. A few of them have travelled more, and some of them have come to few events. And it's always good to get support from home, and it's good to get support from wherever you go. But it's I'm sure they're my friends even if I don't play pro golf anymore, so maybe I can support them what they do from now on. So it's been good to see that I've had such a good support throughout this year.
Now that you're actually not going to hit a golf shot again as a professional golfer on the European Tour, what was your best shot that you ever hit?
Pulled rescue club in Indonesia 2007, possibly 15th or 16th hole, the long par 3. That was my first win. That was on Sunday when I tried to hit middle of the green, and I pulled it left of the flag. I remember the flag was way back left, and there was literally no room left of that flag anyway. So I think people who knew me, they called it at that point that I didn't try to hit that golf shot, but it just happened, and that's where I got my first win.
Yeah, the honesty to that is probably aimed at the middle of the green and pulled it onto the target. Is that right?
Yeah, that's it.
So now that you've finished, now what are you going to do? Are you going to keep involved in golf? It seems like you like the snow, but what are you actually going to do?
As of now, I'll be a full-time homestay dad, but I'm 100% sure that I'll stay in golf, and I'll do things around golf and finish golf, international golf. And I'm sure it'll be pretty wide going forward in the beginning, but I'm sure I'll narrow it down to do something specific.
So as a house dad, what's your cooking like? What's your best dish?
There's a good restaurant down the road.
No, that you cook. Come on, give us it. Don't want the menu, just what's your best dish?
I have a specialty snack that is sausage and a yogurt. You dip a cold sausage in a yogurt, and that's delicious.
Oh, my God.
No, I'm absolutely not. I'd
book a table early.
Well, there's no doubt, Mikko, that you've been an inspiration. We've really enjoyed watching you play over the years as well. Have a great retirement. There's no chance you're coming back, then you're not going to get itchy feet. The clubs are going away. You're never going to come back.
I'm most likely going to travel to a tournament this year or this summer, possibly Wentworth or something like that, but I'll definitely leave my clubs at home. So I'll just come and say hi, and not goodbye, but just come and say hi to the guys. You know, I've had so many nice messages from different people around the tour that I want to see and shake their hand.
Well, you're always welcome on the Race to Dubai show. Many thanks for taking time out to speaking to us. We wish you well in your retirement, and we'll speak soon.
Congratulations, Mikko.
See you, Mikko. Enjoy your life.
Well, dear. Bye. Bye.
Elsewhere, Paul Casey has become the first man to defend the Valspar Championship following a one-shot victory at Palm Harbour in Florida. American Jason Cochrane and Louis Oosthuizen put Casey under pressure on the back nine, but the Englishman held his nerve to par the 18th and retain a title for the first time in his career. I thought Paul Casey played very well. Matt, I don't know if you were across this PGA Tour event, because he's been flaky under pressure over the last few years, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think the last four times he's gone into a PGA Tour event with a lead, and he's always had the lead alone. He's shot over 70 and not completed the victory. Strangely, of course, he didn't do that last night, but everybody else struggled. It's a tough course in Innisbrook, and I think it bodes quite well because he's got quite a nice record at Augusta. I think he's one to keep an eye on.
Plays for Paul because he was coming under... Well, he was taking criticism for his finishes. He's been in such good positions with sizable leads over the last few years and hasn't converted. Yes, he won this one last year, Gordon, but as you were reminding me, he came from way off the pace. Are we seeing Paul Casey getting back to the sort of form that saw him rise? What was he, world number three, world number two at one stage in his career?
Well, yeah, I mean, he did shoot 72 on Sunday, with Dustin Johnson shooting 74, which I think previous to that, Johnson had not shot over 70 for a considerable amount of rounds. So it was all in his favour there, but it certainly is Sunday scores for Paul Casey aren't as good as the first 3 days.
Casey came out with some interesting quotes this week saying that going back to defend the trophy, something he'd struggled to do in the past, but seeing his face up on the posters and in the programmes, that gave him a real boost. Compare that to your experience of defending titles.
It's almost like going home to play your home golf course, and also that what you had created the year before was obviously you can drag on that and say, yeah, I can play the course, although it's a snake pit. There's some horrible, difficult holes there. I've managed it last year, and you get a tremendous welcome as DC. So, yeah, it's like going home, and you've got to embrace that rather than go, oh, I'm defending champion, I don't make a fool of myself. And so he's embraced it and done very, very well. Very difficult to defend your title.
One Englishman who did rise to the top of the world rankings, Luke Donald, but has plummeted to outside of the top 900. He's probably jumped back in it now. First time we've seen him on a leaderboard for ages. Pleased that he's back. He's got these back issues, hasn't he, at the moment?
Yeah. I think it was the Dunhill Links about sort of 2-3 years ago that he last sort of made a top 10. So that's good stuff. I mean, it's a strange one with Luke, that he always seemed the case that when he got to the top, he decided he needed to hit the ball further because he wasn't really competing in the majors. And it all sort of went downhill then. I don't know whether the back issues are related to trying to hit the ball.
He says he's got to warm up his back for a good couple of hours before he plays. That's got to be tough. A herniated disc?
Yeah.
Is this an injury you've struggled with at all, Gordon?
No,
know what
I
it
think
is?
That's the pro's worst nightmare, isn't it? I mean, having an issue and prior to actually even thinking about picking a golf club, get yourself ready for that. So if he's got a bad back, it's... you're going to see less of him the more, unfortunately, because unless that goes away, it's just going to be one of those niggling things that's always going to be there. It's going to be hard for him.
And incidentally, this is the first time European players have won in 3 consecutive weeks on the PGA Tour since 2012. The previous time, also in Florida, when Rory won at a Honda, Justin Rose at Doral and Luke Donald at Innisbrook. John Rahm incidentally was tied 6th. So another good week for the Europeans, taking a lot of dollars over there at the moment.
That's the good news. The bad news might be that regression to mean says that the Americans are about to take the big one, the green jacket.
Let's hope not.
How does that work out? Because the Europeans are going in feeling full of confidence and now you've got the Stars and Stripes on, Donald.
Regression to mean would say that like normally they're spread out, but we're getting lots of victories for Europe. The Americans are bound to win eventually.
Well, I can see that point, but then at the end of the day, if the Europeans don't perform coming up to the Masters, we'll go, well, the Europeans aren't performing, how are they going to ever win the Masters?
Agreed.
I don't know who that was who just pitched up then, but, you know, so we can't have it both ways. I think the Europeans, and especially Rory, I think he's having a really good start to the
Would
year.
Would he be your tip for the Masters at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, you know, do we want Rory firing on all cylinders and then missing cuts because it's all wham bang thank you ma'am, or do we want to see him finish in the top 10 every single week but not victory? Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? So Rory is certainly treading the right road at the moment.
Speaking of top 10s, let's get the top 10 in the world. Matt's got the details for us.
Here we go. At number 10, Ricky Fowler. Number 9, Xander Schauffele. Number 8, John Rahm. At 7, Francesco Molinari. 6, Bryson DeChambeau. 5, Justin Thomas. 4, Rory McIlroy. 3, Brooks Koepka. 2, Justin Rose. And still there at number 1, Dustin Johnson.
That's the top 10. And the top 10, as it stands at the moment, are all playing in this week's feature event, the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play. We have got two events to preview this week, but we're going to kick off with the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play, where Bubba Watson is the defending champion. The format has been tweaked over the years. It's not straight knockout anymore. We have got groups of four, so the players at least get to play three times. And I think that's something that the vast majority have enjoyed, because previously you could just play, well, you could technically play, 10 holes of golf and go home.
Yeah, the players like this, but lots of people who watch don't. I quite like match play, but I'm not a big fan of the group stage.
Does it work now? Is it a little better to watch? Do you think we get the right players winning? It's still a little bit of a lottery because it's match play after all, Gordon.
Yeah, I do think they've changed it from the point of view that one of your favourites or the favourites for the crowd, as you say, can be 12 holes and zipping the bag and going home. It keeps them there longer. It gives them a better opportunity to stay in the tournament. So I think it's horrible if a sponsor has got, you know, 5 of the best players in the world and they've played possibly 12 holes each and they're disappearing after day one. I think it's a great thing. You want to keep the best players there as long as possible. If this is what it takes, then it helps the sponsor.
16 groups of four. So as we mentioned, every player gets to play at least three times. Top 16 ranked players are all seeded and kept apart in the group stage. The player with the best record in each of the groups advances to the round of 16 for single elimination match play. 1 point for win, 0.5 for a draw in the match play groups. The winners of each group meet in the round of 16. Quarterfinals on Saturday, the semi-finals and the final on Sunday. We've got a third place playoff as well. So that's the format. The venue. What do we know, Matt, about Austin Country Club in Texas? Designed and opened in 1980. Looks fairly short, 7,043 yards, according to the blurb here.
Yeah, it's shortish. It's a Pete Dye design. The aim is a bit of risk-reward. That's often a common thing that designers like to say. There was an interesting course review by Rafa Cabrera Bello, who made the semi-finals the first year it was here. And he said the front nine's quite tight, tree-lined, back nine opens out. And he said something that might be worth bearing in mind, that it's quite linksy. And in actual fact, if you look at some of the people who've made the semi-finals, not necessarily the people who've won it, they've all had quite recent links victories. People like Alex Noren, Rafa Cabrera Bello, John Rahm. So that could be a pointer this week.
Apparently, Gordon, it echoes Royal Donnac and also Gullen in Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, certainly for Texas, that's unusual to have a links-type golf course. It sounds great, doesn't it? Tight on the way out. You know, I think often in match play situations, it's wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, let's have a go at it. So it's quite nice that you're going to be restricted on the front nine. So when it comes to back nine, maybe you can open your shoulders up. So I think it sounds a nice venue for a match play tournament.
A lot of European interest, obviously, because we're talking the top players in the world. Justin Rose hasn't played recently in this. What sort of chance this week for Rose? He changed clubs, Gordon, at the start of the year, but he's won this year as well. Seems to be fairly smooth progress since joining Hodmer.
Yes, Justin, you can't discount Justin. I think even for his change of clubs, he's going to be the same player as he has been for the last few years. He's going to be very consistent. He's going to churn out the top tens. And really, for Justin, I think this could be a year for maybe another major.
Brooks Koepka obviously playing. Rory McIlroy, we've talked about already. Francesco Molinari off the back of a fantastic Ryder Cup. Could he be the match play man this week?
An interesting thing about him, Dan, is that this time last year, he went away from this tournament and there were a few quotes from him saying he struggles with head-to-head combat, has a bit of a problem with it. Then, of course, he hit his form in that summer. He actually went head-to-head with Rory McIlroy, albeit in the BMW PGA Championship, won it. Went head-to-head with Tiger Woods in the final round of the Open, won it. Won 5 points from 5 in the Ryder Cup. Something happened from him saying, I'm not very good, in those circumstances to suddenly, I mean, the biggest thing was he found a lot of form, but his confidence must be sky high coming into this. So he doesn't have a particularly good record in the tournament, but he's got that change has happened. He's quite an intriguing one this week.
What about Tiger Woods this week, Gordon? Pulled out recently. Did he have a minor neck problem? And then he was back, obviously, for the Players. Didn't really see him on the leaderboard at Sawgrass. This is an event he's won a long time ago when it was a very different format. There was always a suggestion that he wasn't the best match play performer. Could we see Tiger claim the trophy on Sunday night?
Well, I think if we talk about Tiger and we talk about any event, it's pretty obvious the amount of tournaments he's won. He's won most of them, whether it's one, two or six times. But there's always an issue with Tiger now, and I think that becomes age and what he's put his body through as well. And I think the age has got something to do with it. He's playing young bucks here as well. So in match play, he's always going to be someone ready to knock down.
But he seems to be a slightly different character now. I don't know if anyone saw the little bit of iPhone footage or phone footage from the Players' Championship where there was a fan with the mugshot of Tiger on a T-shirt when he was arrested those years ago. And as Tiger was walking off one of the greens, he saw it, he smiled, he didn't seem to take offence. Have we got a softening of Tiger Woods? Is he a different type of character, or are we never going to know?
It was quite an entertaining sort of smirk, wasn't it, that spilled from his face. I think there's a bit of a difference. There was another thing last week, which was that footage with him playing with Kevin Na, famously one of the slowest players on tour. And for some bizarre reason, Na hit a short putt, jumped in to get it. And Tiger, very out of character from at his peak, sort of copied it, and then the pair of them left the green giggling together.
A lot of Europeans, as we mentioned already, the likes of Tommy Fleetwood, of course, playing Sergio Garcia, Alex Noren, who's done well in this tournament previously. Ian Poulter, we readily associate with match play. Matt Wallace is there as well. Eddie Pepperell played so well in the last round at the Players. Any Europeans that you'd like to talk about, chaps?
Well, remember that word, Gullen, hosted the Scottish Open last year, and Eddie Pepperell was second there. That could be quite interesting. It's his debut, smart guy.
Eddie sort of comes from a different mould, doesn't he? He doesn't really fit the professional image as such. He seems to be carefree. And so when it comes to carefree, match play is a dangerous game to play when someone almost doesn't conform, and he's going to be not intimidated by anyone. He will have the belief, even if I'm three down, what the hell, I can win these last four holes. So Eddie is a non-conformer, but a very dangerous competitor.
Let's get some selections then. Let's get some tips. Matt, we'll go with you first. Usually it's two outside of the top 50 from the Race to Dubai for last year, but obviously when it comes to a WGC event, we waive that particular rule. Give us a couple of players to follow.
I'm going with the man who was second 2 years ago, John Rahm. And I'm also going with Kiradek Afibarnrat from Thailand. He made the quarterfinals last year, but get this, he's a bit of a World Golf Championship specialist. He's finished top five in five of his last seven starts at this
nice.
Level.
Very good. Good reasoning. Gordon?
Matt Kuchar, my pick is American. I think consistency and desire, I like how he plays. He's a non-flustered player. And the other pick is Justin Rose. I think he's just coming into a little bit of form. Another top 10, so Rose is my man.
Kuchar's found some form after not winning for years, and then suddenly he won a couple of events, didn't he?
He was fantastic, wasn't he? But he sort of found the form on quite similar courses, El Camaleon and Wailea, and I'm not sure this course is quite the same.
I'm going to go for Alex Noren and Paul Casey. I think Casey can go back-to-back. Terrific Ryder Cup, as we saw last time, and did win the match play a good few years ago on the European Tour. Alex Noren has got a very good record in this event. I know he's not been playing particularly well recently. Hopefully he'll be inspired by the format. Also this week, we have got the Hero Indian Open, the DLF Golf and Country Club in New Delhi, where we'll have a new champion, as last year's winner Matt Wallace is taking part in the match play. We go to the Gary Player course in New Delhi. What do we know about this particular venue? I'm reading here, 7,379 yards, par 72. Anything quirky or stand out that we should know about it?
The greens. The greens is one big thing. They're very undulating. In the past, there have been lots of videos of players in practice playing some quite interesting shots. Also, there's a quite unusual drivable par 4 on the back nine, which has a big rock at the back of it, and balls can ricochet in all sorts of places.
How difficult is it playing on the subcontinent, Gordon?
Yeah, it's very difficult. It's really hot. Course is going to be very, very tight, so tough to concentrate on the golf course, but its tee shots are paramount on this golf course.
Shubhanka Sharma is one of the home favourites, as is the 2015 champion Anirban Lahiri. We've got Scottish Open champion Brandon Stone teeing up as well. Andrew Beef Johnson, who was runner-up at last year's event, is in the field. Bernd Wiesberger, who I want to say is maybe a class above this and maybe should be playing the match play, but he had that injury and we've not really seen too much of him. He's struggled to find his form of those players. Anyone catch the eye?
Yeah, Bernd Wiesberger is having a bit of difficulty getting four rounds in at the moment. I think Beef could be an interesting one because it's quite a tough course, this. Played very well last year, but remember, he also played Valderrama very well. A tough battle seems to be the thing that gets him going.
Chris Wood, thankfully, we get Gordon on this show when we have Chris Wood in one of the events because Gordy's got the hotline to Chris Wood. And I know that just ahead of our record today, Gordon, you tried to get in touch with Woody. What happened?
Yeah, it's a good idea when he's travelling on a plane in first class. Funny enough, he didn't pick the phone up.
Oh, really?
And I haven't spoken to Woody for about 8 months.
His phone wasn't off. We saw it ring, obviously.
I've got all the stories that you want.
We saw it ring. He just didn't pick up.
Chris has now got another child, so he's spent some time at home.
Yeah.
He's started to tour off, and he's played three events. He's not made any cuts. That's Woody. He seems to be quite comfortable taking time off and then coming off, and he does well in big events. I'm not sure if this tournament is going to suit him. Tight. Very hot. When you talk about Beefy, he was maybe not going to be so beefy. He's lost some weight, hasn't he? He's gone into training mode.
Anyone else that we should mention in dispatches ahead of our selections here? Aaron Rye is playing this week as well. I mean, there's some very good players. I thought that the field might be decimated a little bit with the match play, but this is a fairly strong European Tour event for the time of year and where it is.
Well, I've got my own one player, David Horsey. He's tied eighth here 2 years ago. And had a couple of recent top 20s. Sort of neat player who might fit the mould.
So I'm presuming he is one of your picks?
He is one of my picks.
Okay, that's one of your picks. Give us your other one.
The second pick is also a little themed this week, Kala Samuya. And I'm quite impressed by him. He finished tied 16th in Dubai and actually challenged through the weekend. And he was tied 6th in Kenya. I think this could be the place for him.
Gordon, who do you like?
Soren Kjeldsen, I like this guy. I think he's a real fighter. And as the course is relatively short and will take some hitting your target A to B, that's a pick for me. And then Brandon Stone.
I'm going to go for Prom Miwasat, who won the Thailand Masters on the Thailand Tour earlier on in March. Made the cut at the Maybank Championship, but has got some good top tens over the course of this campaign. And my second pick is Jorge Campillo. He's got a couple of runners-up spots on the European Tour and looks like he's in that winner waiting to happen category. That is it for now. Next time, we'll look back on matters in India and Austin, and we'll also look ahead to the first major of the year, the Masters at Augusta. So please join us for that. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the website, as well as Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram. Are you on Instagram yet, Gordon?
No, I'm not.
You could put your bat problem up there on Instagram.
What is it?
Well, your bat problem.
No, what is Instagram?
What is Instagram?
Well.
Matt, are you on Instagram?
I'm not on Instagram, but I am on Twitter.
And your Twitter handle is?
At Matt Cooper Golf.
That was Matt Cooper. Matt, many thanks.
Thank you.
And previously was Gordon Brown Jr. Gordon.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
From myself, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We'll speak next time.